Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us. We come your way every Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com and newspress.com, and we archive these programs, meaning, well, you know what that means in this high-tech age. It's available for you again and again and again. You can download it, or you can just go there and listen to it without downloading it as many times as you like. Enjoy it, learn from it as I do, and share it with friends as well. I have to say that as we are into this new year, can you believe that it is now 2012? We've been talking about this year kind of like the decade of the 90s. We went on and on about Y2K. And now we go through it and fizzle, nothing happened. Well, here we are in 2012, and I know a lot of folks are out there and they're shaking in their boots about December and all of that good stuff. But what I will tell you is I've learned some things about this mysterious date, and that is that apparently the calculations by some are considerably off. The date is actually October 28th, 2011. Guess what? It's gone by. Now, that's depending upon who you listen to. Very interesting how we generate all kinds of wonderful stress and struggle in our lives when we get into information that we really haven't checked out. We just believe what we're being told. That's why I like to go to the source. I like to talk directly with the people who've put out the books that talk about the subjects that are there to help you. And many of these folks, they've lived what they talk about. They've been through the challenges, the struggles, the strifes. As my guest will attest, Dr. Schrock is a scientist. It's a scientific experience that can save your life. It's basically Doctor's Orders. This is the title of his book, folks. Doctor's Orders, Go Fishing. Dr. Schrock, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Well, thank you, Richard.
It is interesting that you would use the metaphor. And I may be wrong. Maybe it's not a metaphor. Maybe it's to be taken literally, go fishing. How did you come up with... Now, as I was sharing with you before the program, I produce a program called Fish Talk, and it talks about fishing along the Central Coast, down in Mexico, even ice fishing in the middle of the U.S., out on the Florida coast and so forth, all the different kinds of fish, all the different ways to catch fish. And it's fascinating to listen to most of the folks who are very relaxed, very calm. Maybe they get excited, but they're excited about what they do. And so there must be something to this fishing thing.
Right, very much so. And as you started off saying, is it a metaphor or is it literal? And actually, it's both. When I was director of mind-body medicine for a large group of cancer centers, we were based in central Pennsylvania, and I grew up in Pennsylvania, and I was very interested in helping cancer patients and their families develop a will to live. And what I found soon in trying to teach this is rather than sound too much like the doctor or scientist, I was encouraging them to do what they love, of course, but where we were based, they literally closed schools, public schools, the first day of buck season, first day of doe season, and except that trout season began on a Saturday, they would have closed public schools on the first day of trout season as well. And I happened to live in a town honestly called Fisherman's Paradise. And my backyard ran part of the longest, best-known trout stream in all of Pennsylvania. So it became a wonderful image because my specialty was guided imagery and helping people relax is to tell people go fishing, literally, because many of them did and lived to go fishing, but it was also meant to help them think about and do more of whatever brought them great joy in their lives.
And that's really what it comes down to. We've been discussing the subject of why are we here? What is man's purpose? What is he trying to achieve? And it really does come down to what you just stated at the end of your comments there. We're here to experience joy, to experience peace, to have all of these wonderful things. Some might look at that, though, and they say, well, but if that's all you experience, isn't that kind of boring? Well, I have a feeling, Dean, that that is not the case for most of us. We have plenty of challenges that when we have those peaceful moments, they are cherished like gold.
Yeah. I'll say, yeah, life can be very, very difficult. Most of my professional life has been spent working with chronic pain or some chronic disease process or helping people recover from strokes and primarily with cancer. So I can tell you without reservation that life can be very, very difficult, and looking for the joyful moments or refocusing on the positive aspects of life serve a great, great purpose, and an even bigger one when you understand the truth of who you are and the need to love yourself and align yourself with this truth of who you are.
Now, you have been involved in your early career in, and I actually became involved as well, but more as a participant, but you were more of a facilitator in a lot, in some self-help type programs that were available in the late 70s into the 80s, correct?
Yes, that's right. That's how I got started in this.
And I used to question, I'm sitting now here, and here's the juxtaposition, and actually the irony of it all. I'm sitting in the program with all of the other people asking the question, when are they going to get it? And I find that it seems as though I finally got the answer that they weren't. I was. When you put together these types of programs, what was your thought at that point in time? Was the American person, or maybe just the human being, at a place where, because we never heard of these kinds of things in the 40s or 50s or even into the 60s, but it started to come out of the mid-late 70s. I remember programs like EST and so forth. I went through a program in the 80s called Life Spring. Very interesting program. And regardless of what anybody thinks of these types of programs, if you benefited from them, then you benefited from them. What was your program like?
Well, it firstly was that the first time I was introduced to guided imagery or self-hypnosis, but it also was full of really good information in a general of saying how to take back control of your life. And I remember at that time, I was suffering from hay fever, not a big deal, except it was a major nuisance and used to cause me to become quite irritable for maybe half of the year as a result of these symptoms. And the physician I was working with said, at some point, you're going to have to learn to live with this. And I had no idea what I was going to do other than what I had been doing with medicine, but that was completely unacceptable to me. And so I think the value of a self-help type program for me was learning that there were indeed other truly viable ways to take back control of your life, whether it was a health-related issue, relationship issue, business, whatever.
It also seems to me that you're dealing with cancer patients these days, or at least you were at one point, and that seems to be a real big weight to lay on someone. You're sitting there in the doctor's office, you don't know what's wrong with you, and they suddenly throw out, you have cancer of the, or this type of cancer. And it used to be maybe 10 years ago that it was like it could literally take your breath away. Today, there are so many treatments and so many ways of fighting it, but it still has that mystique, if you will, about it, the fear factor, if you will. How were you able to get over that with the, I mean, is that the first big hurdle that most people have to get over is, you know, it isn't the big C. You've got a condition or a dis-ease, and here's what we're going to do to help you through it.
Oh, that's not the message, the last part of what you said that they hear. It's the first part. And the fact is that except for heart disease, cancer kills more people than any other major disease process. So it is very serious, and to this day, when you say cancer, people equate cancer with death. And in my experience, I used to say not only that you're going to die, but you get to fall apart, suffer, and die. So honestly, Richard, unfortunately, that image has not changed much, even though things are changing and there are more options becoming more public. But when you are treated for cancer, pretty much you think conventional medical care, and you go to an oncologist, medical doctor, for treatment. And oncologists and medical doctors, even to this day in most medical schools, are not required to take even courses in nutrition or physical exercise or stress management, things that are real pillars within what we call wellness. So unfortunately, you are still likely, for the most part, your audience indeed may be different, but in general, cancer means you're going to die, and it is extremely scary. And so when I was first getting involved in this work, I was blessed that I worked with Dr. Carl Simonton, who was the oncologist who pioneered using guided imagery with cancer patients. And because of the prior 10 years I had doing self-help type programs, I then took all of my graduate work and my knowledge within the self-help program and then my internships with Carl, and collaborated with Carl then to develop this program, which I then taught to these cancer centers.
Now, you also have another book, more recently, 2009, Why Love Heals. And one of the things that I have found through our interviews on this program, through a lot of the scientific evidence, is that the heart is truly the source of our emotions. They're actually able to measure that now. So we look at love as an emotion emanating from the heart. Does that correlate with what you are doing in your work?
Yes, but I would go deeper than that, and I would say when I was writing that book, the one thing that really got my attention was what I began to learn in the study of quantum physics, and that underlying all of physical reality as we understand it is this electromagnetic field of quantum energy. When you break things down to the very, very smallest form, you know, we think of atomic matter and subatomic matter, eventually you get down to where there is no form. There's only even potential energy. And that field has been identified by many physicists, including by the 1930s, there were four physicists who had been awarded the Nobel Prize in Physics for coming up with this understanding of this quantum field and qualities or characteristics of it. And one physicist in particular, his name was David Bohm, actually referred to this quantum field as a field of love. It is one of complete harmony, order, compassion, and so forth. And everything that then has form comes from that. Our core, the core of everything, is this field of love, which then goes on and manifests in form in some way. And so the point of loving yourself or talking about love is to do whatever you can to realign yourself with your source, with your core. And I can use an analogy with electricity. When we measure electricity, we use an ohm meter, which actually is measuring the resistance of the flow of that electricity. And when that electricity is flowing optimally, we say it's in phase. And then that's when, again, everything works as best as it can. And so similarly then with us, when we are being virtuous, not in any sense of good or bad or right or wrong, but when we are being loving and trusting and caring and so forth, we are literally then resonating in harmony with love, with our core, and allows for the maximal flow of this quantum field or life force energy. And then I say, health is a natural consequence.
I know, it sounds kind of funny, because usually in a lot of our conditions, dis-ease is the natural consequence. And it's one of those things that I'm looking at more and more these days, Dean, that I'm at the age of 15, Dean, I used to say that if I start putting the right things into my body, then I'll have a pretty good body when I hit in my 40s, 50s, and beyond. However, as most of us, even with that kind of an awareness at that early of an age, we didn't necessarily follow that, at least not to the nth degree. And I think I did fairly well. I didn't stay on path, on purpose in that regard 100% of the time. I'd give it 60 to 70%. Because I'm pretty healthy. But we don't do the same thing with our mental or emotional wellness or well-being, that if I put the right things in, that I'll have a good outlook on life when I get into those years that of higher wisdom, supposedly. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, everybody's experience is unique, but certainly when you start out as an infant and then, through childhood, we all develop, it's just a matter of to what degree, a definite sense of insecurity where we don't feel completely safe and loved. And that gets compounded, and that remains with us, those early learned beliefs about who we are and how safe we feel, and carries throughout our lives, and then usually gets worse, and then most people are not as either well-informed or as disciplined in you in terms of good nutrition, because good nutrition is so extremely important. And so if you've not learned to manage stress well, and if you're not using good nutrition, it's only a matter of time, and I pretty much will guarantee you'll develop some chronic disease.
Mm-hmm. Now, I haven't personally experienced this in the short term, but I know people in my life who have made significant changes in their nutrition, their physical fitness, and so on and so forth. They had, let's say, two or three conditions they were taking medications for. And these are individuals in their 50s and 60s. And as soon as they started making those modifications, for example, weight loss, their doctor began taking them off the medication. If it wasn't gradual, it was, completely cold turkey. And they're perfectly fine. For example, one gentleman had not only high blood pressure that he was heading towards because he was putting the weight on, but he also was a diabetic. He is neither of those today because he took the weight off. That, to me, says an awful lot about the regenerative aspects and attributes of the human being.
Absolutely. I just watched a DVD called Forks Over Knives, which is an excellent documentary of really good research that has been conducted throughout the world looking at the importance of nutrition that way, and with diabetes, with cancer, and other chronic disease processes like heart disease. And while I honestly think that managing stress may be the most important thing we can learn to do, nutrition is right in there. And there's no question that you can learn to reverse these kinds of conditions. And I think one person in particular, Dr. Dean Ornish, going back, 20, 30 years now, the wonderful research that he has done and how public he has become, talking about when you have a program of nutrition, exercise, and stress management, you can absolutely reverse heart disease, and doesn't have to be managed with medication.
I know that I've asked this question many times of folks dealing with medical issues, and it has to do with cell regeneration. Now, you and I both know that if we go out and, we get a paper cut, or, we cut ourselves with a thorn or something, there'll be a blemish in the skin for a period of time, and eventually you will look at that same spot maybe a week, 10 days later, it doesn't look like anything happened, which means that the cells have regenerated to the place where they were before it ever existed. So my question has always been, where are those cells getting their instructions that the other cells of the body of higher level, we'll call them organs or tissue, like the heart or the eye, why aren't they getting the same instruction to regenerate back to healthy tissue as opposed to regenerating to the same tissue that's diseased? Any thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it depends on how well you've, maintained the system. If you have an automobile and you don't have regular and good maintenance, eventually it's going to start to malfunction and won't work. And so if even you think of the analogy of putting gas in the car, if you put bad gas in the car, eventually you're going to have a problem. And so with stress, basically your cells do two things. They're either in a growth mode or they're in a protection mode. So when you're feeling stressed, they're in a protective mode and they're not in the normal growth processes. And then eventually your cells deteriorate and die. And in that process, similarly, the immune system gets compromised and you're in trouble.
Okay. Interesting. I know that this whole discussion about ease or dis-ease, I guess is one way to put it, is kind of where we're coming from. And reaching that place of ease, reaching that place where we have good health, we can get about the way we want, we feel good, we feel energized, so that we can go out and do the things that we feel we should be doing. We're on purpose. We're living our purpose. We're on our path, our journey, whatever the term you, whatever metaphor you want to use. And I want to talk more about how you, Dr. Dean Schrock, can help us to get to that place where we can truly be focused. We're not distracted by those other elements, the aforementioned elements. As we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, I'm Richard Dugan, and I encourage you to stay with us. Next up, it's our AAA editor, Beth McDonald. Don't go away. And we're back here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, along with Dr. Dean Schrock, and he is the author of Doctor's Order, Go Fishing, as well as a number of other wonderful works. And Doctor, I am fascinated by all of this because as an observer, I'm not always an observer, but I try to get into that mode as often as possible. I try to observe myself. It doesn't do me any good to watch other people, because if I don't take care of me, it's like the first rule of survival. Take care of number one, because if you don't take care of number one, you're no good to two, three, four, and five. So let's talk a little bit about taking care of number one. How do we, what's your prescription, if you will, for going from a place of dis-ease to a place of ease where we can get on purpose, stay focused, and really enjoy our lives?
Well, a number of things come to mind, and you're asking that question. And the one thing I absolutely must address as part of this is how selfish I found people perceived this to be. That is, where you said you've determined that you need to be number one, and I even think of the image on the airplane when the flight attendant is telling you, you know, should your oxygen mask drop, you need to put yours on first. But most people, in my experience, Richard, and I really truly mean the great majority, when I was telling them to think about what are their interests, what are your interests, needs, values, and to incorporate that into their daily lifestyle, they found it too selfish. Their social conditioning had been that everyone and everything else comes first. So even though the logic is clear, I think the reinforcement throughout our lives is such that people don't do that easily or well. And that was very fascinating for me to discover. And then when my cancer patients were living longer than those receiving only conventional medical care without the benefit of my program, I couldn't comfortably say it was the will to live, because they weren't doing it. And that's when I ended up writing my book, Why Love Heals, a number of years later, when I had to conclude in my research that it was because people felt listened to and cared for and supported is why they lived longer. But I didn't understand that initially, and I didn't understand how that could possibly be true, even though it may sound nice. So, you know, of course, love heals, or love is beneficial. But how does that literally lead to a remission in cancer? And so that's when, again, I did a lot of work to look at, well, then how could that possibly be true? And certainly my message is still one of making time, taking time to do what you need to do to take care of yourself in any sense of stress management. But you simply must create a better balance in your life between doing for others and taking care of yourself. And so I think a key is education. And I love to teach people. And when I taught this to cancer patients and their families, initially based on my experience with helping people recover from strokes, and I remember something I learned early on there was when, fortunately, hopefully, you could be discharged to home after your rehab with a stroke, but then it was going to be a tremendous change in the caretaker's life also, not only for the person, who had the stroke, but now in terms of being there to take care of that person so much. And one of the things I discovered was it was common for friends and family to call the caretaker and say, hey, you still need to get out of the house. You still need to go to church, go to the store, whatever, resume a relatively normal lifestyle, because if you don't take care of yourself, eventually you're going to wear yourself down and be no good to anybody. So I would try to tell people common sense kinds of stories around why they need to create this better balance. But again, I have to come back to this, Richard. People found it too selfish and really, really struggled with this. So here you can imagine your doctors, you're diagnosed with cancer, and we're telling you you need to go fishing as part of your treatment. And even though they were diagnosed with what they thought was a life-threatening disease, most of them couldn't do it.
There are all kinds of diseases and so forth out there. Why did you choose cancer patients?
It chose me.
Ah.
It's fascinating you ask that question, because I even remember my mother, you know, back when I was studying guided imagery as my doctoral program, you know, focus. And she said, what are you going to do with this? I said, I don't know. All I knew is that the power of the mind intrigued me unbelievably. There was no way that you could use self-hypnosis or any kind of what we call deliberate intention technique to make such major changes in your life. But I had discovered that first personally for myself, where I overcame my hay fever. I learned to use it to stop smoking and change my weight. And the big one was I had played soccer in undergraduate school, and I tore my cartilage and ligaments in my right knee, and the orthopedic surgeon said, you're going to need surgery eventually. You could try to rehab it. And he said, in 10 years, you'll have to have surgery. Well, it turned out to be 12, and my knee really did hurt, and I was becoming pretty immobile. But I had learned about guided imagery the year before, and the doctor who taught me about it said, well, hey, why don't you use guided imagery so you don't have to have the surgery? And that's when I joke, you do not know what I said to him in response to that outrageous proposal. You've got to be nuts. So, but anyway, said, you've got nothing to lose. Give it a try for a week and see what happens. You can always go get the surgery. Within 2 days, Richard, I had no pain, and by the end of the week, I had full use of my knee. I've never had surgery. And that was one of the experiences that then drove me to go back to school to study this and figure this out, initially thinking it's too good to be true. There was no way that was why I was able to do this stuff. There was something else. But that's fortunately for me, and now I hope as an educator, where I can tell other people, you have tremendous power and ability to heal yourself or stay well.
I have to say that my own experience, I have not had cancer, but it is said that just about everybody knows someone who, if they haven't had it, who has had cancer.
Right.
And for the longest time, I was able to say, not me. Up until 10 years ago. And I saw the process. I saw the fear. I even saw the doubt about the diagnosis, not only in this other person, but also in me going, this doesn't make any sense. This is like, what, did this just magically appear? There were symptoms 6 months prior that for some reason the doctors weren't focusing on, but this person was very proactive and continued, despite the emotional upheaval inside, to pursue, to try to get answers, to try to find out what was going on inside their body. And I guess that's one of the other aspects that we might want to talk about is when you have a condition, a dis-ease, as we'll use it in a general term, it doesn't mean that it's over. But that's the hurdle that we have to get over before we can even begin to jump into guided imagery.
Right. Actually, disease as such is a symptom. And it's I think, an unfortunate focus in medical care, where basically medicine is best described as symptom management. And I look at symptoms as what I call a benevolent messenger. It's a symptom telling you that something's out of balance. And if you would pay attention, you need to do whatever that means to rebalance. And historically, actually, shamanism is the most practiced approach to healthcare on the planet. And their basic approach was then to use a form of prayer. You would go to the medicine person who would enter the spirit world, again, pray, meditate, and get insights into what the person needed to do, which was almost always about being out of balance with community values. And then coming together with the support of the community and realigning with those values. And the other thing was then with the use of herbs. Then that's basically how they treated the illness. And that's why I think we have such a horrible track record with chronic disease and medical approaches to attempting to cure it. And it's not going to happen until they address the underlying causes and not just keep focusing on managing the symptoms.
I am fortunate that I'm not taking any of these medications they advertise on television, but I do have to chuckle, especially when one of the side effects is the very symptom for which you're taking the medication. It's like, there's something wrong here. Are these people not, are they not reading the ad copy before it's recorded? Because it's like, I don't quite understand how or why I would do that. Because then I need to take something else to counter all the side effects. And of course, you have that continuing progression instead of dealing with the root cause. Do you find that the root cause of most, if not all, of these diseases is an emotional block of some kind?
Right. But I am a psychologist by training. So, you know, that is my focus and what I tend to think of first. But even Dean Ornish said, as a cardiologist, when he did all of his wonderful research, that in the end, he felt that the stress component was, in fact, by far the greatest, even though he's best known for his rather strict vegetarian diet approach. But those two things, I think, are key. Is firstly, you've got to learn to manage stress better. And then, just as important, really, is you have to eat foods that are nutritious and stop eating foods that are toxic.
Well, my wife has me on a better... I shouldn't say that. When guys say, well, my wife has me this, my wife... No, you made the choice. You may have taken that person's, her advice, but you still made the choice. So it's still yours. You still get to own it. It isn't hers. So I have made the choice to follow my wife's advice, but also because I want to feel better. I want to get off any medications that I might be taking. I want to have normal blood pressure instead of hypertension. I'm going to start doing some of the things in a more serious fashion than I was because I want to feel better all the time, not just some of the time. When we are looking for sources of information, I'm curious as to where you go to get that. And I put that in sort of two categories. I know that as a trained a medical practitioner, you know, you go to those sources, if you will, from your education and so forth. But what about using your intuition? What about using your insights from that aspect of a spiritual nature when assisting your clients, your patients?
Yeah, that's interesting that you bring that up, because that was quite a tightrope that I walked when I was working in a medical setting. And being a licensed professional, is that everything we do had to be based on research. And so how do you address the idea of insight or any intuitive process? And fortunately, of course, there is a great deal of research supporting the use of knowledge coming from insight. But it's pretty much anathema to the way the medical community thinks and how we really go about deciding what we need to do to take care of ourselves. And God bless you should you self-diagnose, should you actually determine for yourself what is wrong and what you need to do. But the fact is that intuition is a very, very natural part of who we are. And when you understand this quantum field that underlies and connects everything, if any one part of that field knows, the whole field knows, because it's all connected. And so by learning to get deeply relaxed, you know, do some meditative kind of focused process, you can access that quantum field and literally access anything, all knowledge, with one major caveat. You have to have a working knowledge within the area that you're asking your question. Even Einstein said that he got most of his theory of relativity from his dreams, but he had to study for years to make sense of what he got. But the fact is that whether we call it prayer and you are looking to a particular religious or spiritual figure for your insights, or they're honestly just tapping into what I'll call the wisdom channel, that there's literally this quantum source field that contains all information, and you can access it and gain insight into any problem, any interest, concern in your life.
You know, I find that fascinating. I've talked even with other medical professionals who are dealing in more the alternative medicine, but they've been educated in the more traditional or orthodox, if you will. And they all, including, I was actually surprised by this because I hadn't actually spoken one-on-one with an atheist before, but even an atheist acknowledges that there is a spiritual aspect to life. And I thought, wow, we talked about other things as well in terms of, you know, isn't there a God? But the point is that most people seem to accept that this is a reality, but for some reason, it's still difficult to come out and say in public, with this radio show, I don't ask the questions, Dean. The universe asks the questions. I'm just along for the ride, like you. I don't know what's going to come out. And that, so to acknowledge and to admit that that's how I do my job, strictly by intuition, you know, most people wouldn't do that. I mean, a physicist certainly wouldn't do that. A rocket scientist isn't going to admit that they follow that. And I hadn't actually heard, maybe not in those exact words, Einstein basically saying the same thing. He just went back and sort of checked his work with man's information, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, I want to go back to the idea of religion or spirituality or atheism. You know, we have looked to any number of wise people or groups in our lives to answer questions like, who am I? Why am I here? Where am I going? What's it all about? And whether we look at that as just a philosophical question or something that really holds genuine meaning for people, is that I think it's a very appropriate consideration, but I would say even more so when you realize this truth of who you are. And I have to tell you that this caught me quite by surprise, and I thought I was being just as blasphemous as I could possibly be when I ended up concluding that we are the quantum field. We are the holy grail that we've been looking for. We are literally God manifesting in form. And the blasphemous part of this is not only that statement, but interestingly, I cited numbers of passages from the Christian Bible where, in fact, it says we are one with everything, and then from other philosophic or religious positions as well. It's just that my friend used to say we put the emphasis on the wrong syllable, is that, you know, we focus on within our spiritual training that we're born in sin, we're rotten to the core, you know, someone had to come and save us because we were so horrible. And yet there's a very, very different message in that book as well as all others, talking about the fact is that we are one with everything, and we are omnipotent, and we are all-knowing and all-loving. That is our core. It's just that. And this raises another big question. So how did this get so screwed up if this is the truth? But I honestly believe that for me, as I've tried to make sense of this, the one of the major points of being human, beyond what you said around the opportunity to experience emotions like peace and joy and so forth, is to experience what love is not in order to more fully appreciate what love is.
Yeah.
And so if you've been a prisoner of war, and then you experience freedom, it's going to really, really impress you about then how special it is to experience freedom. And so when you've been, down and out and really had your nose rubbed in it, and then you come to, I think, both a greater quest and appreciation then for when someone or some things are loving. And it's not for me to say for other people what they come to believe is the point of life, but I think that's an incredibly important question, maybe the most important question we could ask, because we eventually were going to die, and then do you want to get to that point and not having even considered that maybe life has served a purpose? Because if it does, seems to me like you want to be thinking about that and addressing it. But if, in fact, you're an atheist and you think there's no point to life, you know, it's once around in the merry-go-round, then I say go fishing anyhow, because you still just have this one shot. Go for it.
It's kind of, what's it going to hurt? I mean, you can go ahead and do it. It's not going to hurt you. And who knows? Maybe you'll get something out of it. And that's kind of the way I have tried to take a look at a lot of experiences in life and in those terms that I also tell people in terms of their own intuition, that you hear it all the time. You know that you hear it. How many times do you follow it? And I make this is the only guarantee that I would ever make, doctor, that by listening to that intuitive voice within each one of us, I can guarantee you that it will never, ever, ever hurt you. It may challenge you, but it will never guide you in the wrong direction.
Right, but right away I want to say the key here is discernment.
Mm-hmm.
Because having dealt with this now for more than 30 years, you know, I've had lots of questions, but how do I know that, you know, this insightful something is true, or what is the source of that information? And so within the practice of what we call interactive imagery, mm-hmm. where you go within, you get deeply relaxed, do some meditative type process, and then let an image or this inner voice come to you around, you know, whatever is your interest or concern, or if you want to access what some might call a spirit guide or some angelic realm, you still can never let go of this process of discernment. And if whatever you're contacting feels loving, is caring, is kind, they would say then proceed, and you may well choose to trust whatever you're getting. But like anything else, you know, I used to joke around this joke, it's really short, so how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. Is, you know, so if you're going to develop your intuitive skills,
yeah.
It's like any natural ability. Some are much better initially than others, but everyone is naturally intuitive. And unfortunately, because we are so oriented to determining through reason and logic and analysis and science what is true, then we have not developed this other part of our brain. And an interesting book and resource called My Stroke of Insight by Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor. Here she is a neuroanatomist, a brain scientist, and she has a stroke where her left brain hemisphere is compromised, and now she only has the use of her right brain. And talks about the experience she had of oneness, you know, where the right brain, you know, is not the one that is so analytical. That's the left. And when she didn't have the ability to do that, talks about what a unique experience she had and experiencing the sense of connectedness and so forth, and then realizing that indeed you could access that part, which had a very different reality than when the left brain is dominant.
Dr. Dean Schrock, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. How can people get a hold of any or all of your books and materials like Why Love Heals and, of course, Doctor's Orders, Go Fishing?
Okay. Well, I have a website, www.deanschrock.com. And when you get to that website, there's a very brief front page that people might find interesting and a brief interview. And you can also there access a free e-course on Why Love Heals if you choose to do that, and a free guided imagery exercise about Why Love Heals. And then on the buttons across the top, the very first one is Products. And if you click on Products, then that's where you'll see where you could order my books, Doctor's Orders, Go Fishing, or my best-selling book, Why Love Heals. And then I have two guided imagery CDs also. And then I taught a program not that long ago where I was very interested in kind of pulling together all the pearls of everything that I had learned and like, okay, how can people really take care of themselves, take back control of their lives, and I called it How to Transform Your Life. And so I have a 7-week downloadable audio program also available for people. So again, I would encourage people to go to my website, deanschrock.com, and they would have those resources.
Great. Well, Dr. Dean Truck, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program and sharing your story and your insights and helping us to work through and find that place of ease in our lives. Even if indeed it is a momentary thing, as you've already stated, the more we practice it, the better we get at it, the longer we can stay in that state of ease. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
I'm Richard Dugan, and this has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And until next Saturday at this same time, love to Lal.